postpartum body odor. It is a totally natural phenomenon because your body chemistry changes after giving birth. And so sometimes that means that what worked before is no longer effective. But I am excited to say that now there is a solution for that stubborn odor. The Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is a completely natural deodorant made by a postpartum mom who went through it herself. And it works by eliminating and preventing bacterial body odor without covering up your skin's comforting smell to your baby while giving you 12 hours of odor control. And let me tell you, it actually works. Here at the house, we've all been trying it and loving it. Now, before you think, ew, you're sharing a deodorant with your husband and daughter, let me explain that this full body deodorant comes in a convenient pump applicator that lets you apply it anywhere on your body with no bacteria traveling on the deodorant, so no ew involved. We also love that the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant has a delightful natural scent of USDA certified organic extracts that smell like a pink sugar cookie with lemon frosting. I thought this would be a little strange, but it's actually amazing. Also, the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is free from artificial fragrances and any kind of senoestrogens or herbs that can interfere with breastfeeding. Find your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant at postpartumdeodorant.com. That's postpartumdeodorant.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 20% off through the month of May. Get your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant now at postpartumdeodorant.com and start smelling more like yourself again. Now that we're in full spring mode, I am constantly reaching for my Jenny Kane Crop Cashmere Cocoon Cardigan because I find it is the perfect level of warm and cozy for when there's still a light chill in the air, but I don't want a coat. And like so many of Jenny Kane's bestsellers, this 100% cashmere cardigan is just so versatile. So I can wear it on its own over dresses, short sleeves, long sleeves, with slacks or jeans. It works with all of it, which is a really good thing because I just never want to take it off. And of course, this cardigan has the impeccable and luxurious level of craftsmanship that you can expect from all of Jenny Kane's products. Jenny Kane is a California brand through and through, and so think minimalist and effortless, but totally refined. Because they are a sponsor of the podcast, for a limited time, our listeners can get 15% off their first order while supporting our show. Go to jennykane.com and use the code BIRTHFUL15 to get 15% off. Now, I know that I go on and on about Jenny Kane sweaters because I'm frankly obsessed, but they also have everything you could want to finish out your look. They have dresses, shoes, and even a stunning collection of home essentials. Curate a wardrobe that never goes out of style at jennykane.com. As a Birthful listener, get 15% off your first order when you use the code BIRTHFUL15 at checkout. That's 15% off your first order at jennykane.com, promo code BIRTHFUL15. Let getting dressed be one less thing to worry about. Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today's show is about your baby's position in the womb. How does your baby's position affect the flow of labor? Are there things you can do during pregnancy that can help baby get in a better position? Will doing these things help you be more comfortable during pregnancy? Will it make birth easier? Gail Tully is here to tell us all about it. Stay tuned. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. As always, thank you so much for the love you give the show and all the recommendations and telling your friends about it. If you like what you hear, then make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a thing. All right, we're approaching the end of summer here in the U.S., and I find that that's time that always throws me for a loop. And that does require some last minute adjustments. And that's the case for today's episode. Usually we'd be doing a brand new interview with Birth Pro, but circumstances came together to create a perfect little storm. And so I'm doing a renewed episode instead. However, this is a topic that is a vital part of the labor flow equation. The physical aspects of a physiological birth is one of my first tenements in terms of a birth model that I've created. So even if you listened to it a while ago, it's worth checking it out again. Just review it. Plus, my guest is the amazing Gail Tully from Spinning Baby. So just that is worth the re-listening. Gail has over 35 years of experience working with birth, including 20 years as a home birth midwife, and she's responsible for conceiving and developing Spinning Babies. Back in the day, Gail was kept busy organizing doula program developments in hospitals and community nonprofits in Minneapolis, St. Paul, while training doulas with Donor International approval status. And now she focuses most of her time on her unique offerings that include growing Spinning Babies and also sharing information about belly mapping, resolving shoulder dystocia, and breech babies. All right, here we go. Gail, welcome. So happy to have you here.
Adriana, it's wonderful to be with you.
This is so much fun. After 20 years being a midwife, what made you decide to focus on baby's position and create Spinning Babies?
I'd been really learning about baby's position through the time that I was attending births actively and noticed that we didn't have a lot of tools. We didn't have a lot of techniques that were effective universally. Sometimes they worked and sometimes they didn't. So I wanted to learn more and more, and I started to have a different perspective of how babies move through the pelvis and why they slow down, and in those few births where the babies slow down, why was that going on? So as I made sense out of it, I thought, well, why don't I share this with other midwives and doulas and see what they think, and I can learn from them too. Over the years, very quickly, I found out I had a very unique perspective, and the midwives and doulas were quite interested. And by adapting a different perspective, a different view on how labor progresses and how we can help the labor that's not progressing, by having a different view, what I mean is we're asking a different question. We're not saying, how can we make the cervix dilate? When labor's not progressing well, very often the strategy today is to strengthen the contractions and get the cervix to dilate, where it's a kind of a mechanical view. And I am very pragmatic in looking at the physical, but I'm noticing that there's a lot of soft tissue anatomy, a lot of muscles, ligaments. And by studying those and observing birth, I think that the baby's position is a reflection of the mother's soft tissues. The soft tissues, the muscles pull here, the ligament pulls there, and makes the shape of the uterus maybe a little more narrow at the bottom or a little twist in it. And even though that's not happening all the time for all women, when it does happen, then the baby has to send a smaller part of its body down there, perhaps the forehead, which is more narrow than the large dome of the head, or maybe a little baby bottom instead of the bigger head will fit in the bottom of the pelvis. Now, these aren't the only reasons for babies to get into positions that are less ideal for birth, but I think that that's the most common reason. And so by focusing on what we can do to make baby's job easier, then we make labor easier for the mother. We help the labor to progress the way nature would have it progress, and more comfortably for the woman, more pleasurably. So if she has hopes for a natural childbirth, we can add a lot of techniques in our approach to make that more enjoyable and more possible in today's sort of busy obstetrical hospitals, right?
And which is ultimately what we all want, better and easier labors.
I think it's great because then mothers and babies can get on with meeting each other and being skin to skin and better breastfeeding and more competence, really, because when we start at a healthy place, we can respond to our body's instincts and we have our inner knowing, the inner wisdom of the woman. But when something's off balance, sometimes we don't get those signals. Sometimes our body's trying to restore the balance. The contractions are trying to help the baby into the pelvis. Things aren't quite lined up, and the mother doesn't get all of her natural instinctual signals and messages if hormonally and functionally she's not in alignment with the innate design for birth within us. So we can add balance. There's some pretty simple techniques. Some of them are kind of unusual that make room for the baby. And what I mean is it releases something too tight, or it helps something come out of a twist. Maybe it's a ligament from the uterus to the sacrum, right in between the uterus and the inside of the mother's very bottom of her back, right in that triangular sacrum. And if that's pulled over to the side, the mother might not notice it. Sometimes women are aware that one leg is slightly shorter than the other, or a hip is slightly rotated. It's achy to walk. She has sciatica pain. These could be misalignments or a muscle that's too tight.
And it's kind of her body sending signals of, there's something up here. Please look at it.
Yeah, right, because pain is always a signal to get our attention. What's it teaching us? It's our teacher. The instable pelvis, it's uncomfortable. In pregnancy, as pregnancy develops and the baby gets larger, there's more weight on the mother's pelvis. A little instability at the beginning of pregnancy is now has more weight to pull it. So it becomes uncomfortable to lay on one hip, or sometimes uncomfortable to walk. So what I've been learning over the years is I started out talking about, well, if we do this technique, it helps labor progress. Now I'm realizing, oh, the soft anatomy is something to really pay attention to. This is a no-brainer for the therapeutic massage therapist or the osteopath or chiropractor, someone who is very anatomy-oriented. But for the average midwife and doula, we've been thinking about the bony pelvis. We've been taught to think about the bony pelvis. Mm-hmm. I had a doctor recently tell me, this is so fascinating to find out about the effects of the soft tissue. I didn't realize it would affect birth. But when we realize our pelvic floor is a series of muscle layers that open front to back like a buttonhole, really, when you think about it, the baby often comes down facing one hip, and then the head turns to fit the buttonhole, the open front to back of the pelvic floor, and ends up facing the mother's tailbone as the baby's born. So if that buttonhole is pulled over to one side or is very tight because we've been doing super core strength or 100 squats a day, or we had a car accident with a little twist, or we have some habits of crossing our leg or something like that. Things can get a little tilted, a little twisted, and baby has to find the way. The buttonhole's not pulled over the side, so one part of the head fits looser on one side of the mother's pelvis and less on the other. Then what? Well, then the baby's head tips to the side as if the baby's listening for instructions, because now the wide part of the head is in the pelvis and the baby can't line its spine up with its neck and skull, so it can't help with the birth. And the birth becomes up to the mother and the baby's head is bigger. It takes longer to push the baby out, but somebody put the mother on the clock or said she has to stay in bed. Or maybe with the epidural, there isn't a good oomph of contractions anymore. Let's back it up. Let's see what we can do to help this woman be confident and more relaxed. And when she feels like there's something she can do to bring about an easier birth, it does help confidence and gives those women that want to prepare for birth some very pragmatic and practical exercises to do these exercises, and to have techniques to use in labor. Thank you, Adriana. That took me a long time to get all that out.
I was going to say, okay, now let's take that apart, because there's tons of information in all that you just told us. So you mentioned the a bit of on the elements that come into play in determining the baby's position, and you spoke to about soft tissues. Can you tell us a little bit more what those soft tissues are, what we're think what you're considering?
That would be all the muscles and ligaments, and even the membrane around the organs, muscles, ligaments, and joints and vessels called the fascia. The fascia is a living membrane, like a matrix where water comes through it. I talk about it like being an under-the-skin river. It's very thin, but it's very durable and strong, and it is part of our the supportive tissue that goes all around our muscles and through the muscles too, right? It's that white marbly stuff you see in meat, if for those meat eaters. I'm one of them, actually. I hate to tell you, Adriana, but
I don't.
I remember that from our potluck together in Rochester.
Yes.
So anyway, so that connective tissue is a living membrane with fluid running through it. So it's conducting electricity and helping the muscles do their thing, including contract and support weight and load and all these things that I'm, as a layperson, I'm telling you in a very layperson understanding. So when that comes into balance, and we don't have to be perfect, but then we have space and we have flexibility and we have tone and we have a mobile sacrum. And the mobile sacrum is the very key to childbirth.
Why is that?
Because it moves a centimeter or 2 centimeters out of the baby's path. Nobody really talks about that, but it's known, it's commented on, but it's not really clearly discussed in the midwifery world or the physician world looking at birth. So, for instance, I've heard Ina May talk about midwives in the Caribbean saying the baby won't come until the back opens. What does that mean, the back opens? Well, the natural reflexes in childbirth, the natural movement of the body in childbirth is not only the cervix dilating, but it's also the sacrum backing away from the center of the body. So the doula or the midwife or the labor and delivery nurse, anybody who's standing beside a woman in active labor and gently touches her sacrum. Some mothers really find that comforting. So, of course, we would ask the mother's permission before we would reach over and assess her sacrum, right? But I would just say, may I touch your sacrum during this next contraction? And most women find it quite relaxing and say yes. And it's a very light touch, and you can feel this river of birth moving through this fascia, right? It's a motion in the membranes around the bone. It's very subtle, but when you don't feel it, you know it's lacking. There is no movement there. So we do, we pay attention to that, and we look for that flexibility. This is kind of beyond what a lot of your listeners were expecting to hear, I think, but mothers can do exercises themselves for the hip openers, for instance, in the yoga world, stretches, and physical therapy. Women can get the professional work of a physical therapist, a myofascial release, craniosacral, osteopathic or chiropractic, right, to help us get in balance. Well, there's techniques that women can do themselves. We've got a free list at spinningbabies.com, and the Daily Essentials does a lot of this. And if women restore a bit of balance and flexibility, it supports birth. Now, how many women need to do this? That's the question.
Mm-hmm. And how early do they need to start before we talk about that, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Yum, delicious, tasty, super clean water. That is what we now happily drink, thanks to our AquaTrue Reverse Osmosis Water Purifier. It's just so much easier for us to stay hydrated. For me, that is vital because I am prone to getting headaches, and so being well hydrated really helps with that. And if you're pregnant or nursing, being well hydrated is also vital for you because good hydration is key during this time of life. AquaTrue purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process that removes 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, and they have water purifiers to fit every type of home, from installation-free countertop purifiers to higher capacity under-sink options. They even have a Wi-Fi connected purifier and mineral boost options. Also, their filters are affordable and long-lasting, with just one set of filters from their classic purifier making the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. Using AquaTrue water can even improve the taste of your coffee, tea, and anywhere else you use water to cook, like for making rice, quinoa, stocks, or soups. I truly can't say enough good things about my AquaTrue. AquaTrue also comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and even makes a great gift. Today, my listeners receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to AquaTrue.com. That's AquaTrue.com and enter code BIRTHFUL at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue water purifier when you go to AquaTrue.com and use the promo code BIRTHFUL.
And we're back talking with Gail Tully. So Gail, how early should people start doing these activities?
Right. So imagine a spectrum from easy to difficult. Where are we on that spectrum? Sometimes we think our intent for natural birth puts us over on the easy thing. If I have the intention for natural birth and I have a provider that's willing, or I choose to have a birth with no provider at all and then they won't interfere with me, or I have a doula, or I read this book or took this class or whatever, you know, that's kind of how people think about it now. And for most women, that's most women with the intent for natural birth, they're going to have a natural birth. But if we have something, something tight that might hold the baby back. And one of the common things is round ligaments in the front. So there's two round ligaments, and if they're tight, women usually feel spasm in those ligaments in the front. So
during pregnancy and
during
labor?
Pregnancy. And it's not that common in labor, but the thing is they're not tight only when they're spasming.
Okay.
That's
okay.
A symptom that they're tight. And usually when we roll over in bed, is when we feel the spasm. And it's not that unusual around 15 to 18 weeks pregnant, as those ligaments are really growing. But repeated and long-term sort of jabs, like if you put your hand down your lower abdomen towards your right hip, let's say your right hand, your fingers end about the middle and your wrist is near your hip. That's the place where, and your pinky fingers down towards your thigh, that's the area where you would feel that round ligament spasm. That would be the right side, or some women feel it on the left side. Okay, so that becomes like a little barrier for baby's rotation, especially more in the first-time mom, or the mom who is really looking for a natural birth after a long labor and a cesarean for her first baby. Those are the two moms that really want to start early. So when morning sickness is over, or even before pregnancy, just depends. See, where do you want to put yourself on the spectrum? If you truly are on the easy side, then a technique or two does it. But some people aren't on the easy side, even though we all hope to be. So the woman that happens to be on the more difficult side of the spectrum of ease will need to do several things. Now, it would be great to have a questionnaire so that we could figure out where we are on this spectrum of ease, but I don't think it's that simple because there's about 36 muscles going to the pelvis. I hear myself talking and I'm worried some of the listeners are going to be worried about this.
Well, but in truth, I mean, on the website, on spinningbabies.com, you have some daily activities, daily exercises that any mom can do. Now, even if they're on the easy or the more difficult spectrum, if they're on the easy, this won't make things out of whack. Like they're all going towards balance. So there's really no harm in them doing them.
As long as there's certain contraindications, like don't go upside down if you have high blood pressure, mm-hmm. glaucoma. And then how are we going to do it? We're going to do it gently. We're going to do it attuned to our body. And we're going to, you know, the guidelines I put in by doing it gently or doing this one once a day or that one once a week, you know, those seem to be fine schedules. But some people will think, well, if this is good to do once a day, I'm going to do it 10 times a day. And, you know, it's the over-enthusiastic kind of approach like that that I can't say that may be too much. But adding balance does not make a baby in a poor position, because the baby would be in the best position possible if the space was available. Gravity wants to bring the head down, and the shape of the womb is such that when the baby's on the left side, it curls the baby in deflection. This is from something that we all have called right obliquity. Well, I say we all have it. I mean, we all potentially have it. There are a couple of women that don't have it, just like there's a couple of people that have their heart on the right side and not on the left side. You know, there's some anatomical variations. But the far majority of us have right obliquity. If the uterus is steeper on the right and curved on the left, so the baby who settles on the left has a flexed chin and sends the crown of the head into the pelvis, the baby on the right might have a straight back and sends the top of the head into the pelvis, and the top of the head is longer front to back. And when the baby is facing forward, that puts the forehead a little bit over the mother's pubic bone at the end of pregnancy. Now, this would be something that would show up after 38 weeks pregnancy if it were happening with most women.
And if baby's looking forward, we're talking more of a posterior positioning, so more like a back labor.
Yeah, well, and some women have back labor with a posterior baby and some don't. And I didn't have a posterior baby and I had back labor because I'm short and I had a car accident. And I thought going to the chiropractor a couple of times was enough. But when I got pregnant again, I mean, when I got pregnant after the years after the car accident, I needed to, all I was doing was walking. And walking is great, and it's one of the most important exercises, but it doesn't open the hips. You can imagine your legs are always going forward, back. They're never going, you know, there wasn't a lot of side to side. So forward lunges are perfect, but also doing some things with your thighs apart. You know, you need like windmills, an excellent exercise, and there's some specific hip openers and triangle pose and the different wonderful exercises that are addressing more muscles. So instead of me addressing the very same set of muscles all the time, I want to increase more muscles and get more range of motion. So flexibility and range of motion, alignment, these are all words that kind of go with balance. Mm-hmm.
And so you were mentioning earlier that we did a potluck in Rochester, and that's because earlier this year you came and did a wonderful workshop that I was lucky enough to take. And a lot of the things, so you were talking about, and you mentioned just now, how that uterus can be a little kinked one way, and it depends on things that we don't normally think about. Like, for example, I've always snowboarded. And snowboarding, have a strong stop and then a twist, right, to get you to stop yourself. Well, my baby was
breech for most of the pregnancy. I had an external version, and so the doctor was able to manually turn her. She did stay head down. This was around 37 weeks, and she stayed head down until 41 weeks, actually. But which was fantastic, right? She got into that place, but she was posterior, and I had very strong back labor the whole time. And even though I did yoga, I swam. I didn't do, at that time, I didn't know about spinning babies. So this was 10 years ago. I didn't do the inversions that are some of your daily exercises or have chiropractic adjustments. So I wasn't looking at balance. Like you said, a lot of people don't consider the soft tissues imbalance as something to create space so that baby gets in a better position. And after taking the workshop, it was like a big aha moment for me, thinking, ah, the snowboarding may have something to do with it. Why she was breached for so long, and why even though when she got head down, still wasn't going into that beautiful, you know, position looking back and towards my left, that often known as LOA, the less left occipital posterior. I throw that out for moms just because your doctor or your midwife might say that. But LOA is sort of, would you agree that's the ideal or more or for an easier birth position?
It's really any of the L's. I mean, here's the thing, the wonderful work of Jean Sutton, the New Zealand midwife who wrote with Pauline Scott, Optimal Fetal Positioning, talked about the left and the right. And so the LOA has become the classic ideal position or optimal position. But, you know, for those of us with a gynecoid pelvis, the rounder pelvis, it's wider side to side, then our starting position is ideally left occiput transverse, and transverse just means the baby's facing a hip. When the occiput is down, the okay, let's try this again. First word is the mother, the direction on the mother, so her left or right. The second word, or the part of the baby, is occiput for head down, or sacrum for a breech. And then we go back to the mother's body, and what part of that occiput, which is the back of your head, if you put your hand way in the back of your head, where a 1950s ponytail might have been, you feel the occiput. That is, and the occiput's the
landing. And now, of course, we're all putting our hands on the back of our heads.
I'm counting on it. And that occiput is the landmark. Now, the very back of the head doesn't come through first, ideally. It would be the crown of the head. But the crown of the head involves the parietal bones and the occiput and the posterior fontanelle. So the easiest single landmark to mark the baby's position is the occiput. So second word is baby part. And third word goes back to what part of the mother's pelvis is that baby part. So if the baby's head down, it's occiput. If the baby's occiput posterior, like your baby was, then the occiput's towards the mother's posterior or the mother's back, somewhere in the back fourth of her pelvis. Each hip would be occiput transverse. If the baby was on the left, it would be left occiput transverse. If the baby was on the right, it'd be right occiput transverse. And if the occiput is in the front portion of the pelvis, then the baby's occiput anterior. So for a woman with an anthropoid pelvis, that's a pelvis that's naturally longer front to back, her baby starting position would be occiput anterior, not left occiput anterior, just direct occiput anterior. So we leave off the first word on left or right because the baby's neither left nor right. It's directly occiput anterior. So sometimes the literature says direct occiput anterior. And with mother's pelvis is longer front to back, her posterior baby might come right through her pelvis without rotating and without too much trouble. Now, let me say that's from a midwife's perspective, maybe not the mother's. She's doing hard work of labor. But her pelvis is very likely shaped to allow a posterior baby through. Whereas a mother with a triangle-shaped pelvis is not likely to have that. Let me put it this way. Fewer of those moms would have a direct osput posterior baby born without help or without a cesarean.
Gail, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
With Mother's Day coming up fast, are you looking to get your mom, grandma, or mother figure a gift that they'll actually love? You know, something that is treasured instead of dying out or collecting dust? If so, you need to know about MyLifeInABook.com, which is a service that helps turn their life stories into a beautiful book that can be passed down. How amazing is that? And the process couldn't be easier. Basically, if they can use email, they can create their book. Every week, My Life in a Book will send them an email with a prompt question to get them started. And if they don't like the question, they can easily edit it or change it. We gave a My Life in a Book to a family member that always wants to document all family get-togethers through images. And let me tell you, the process of sending the gift was super simple, even letting us choose the date we wanted the gift to be sent. I'm so looking forward to discovering stories about her youth, her adventures, and the challenges she has overcome. And since My Life in a Book lets you add an image with each answer, she can now share the story that goes along with her many photos. Another great thing is that the answers can be edited at any time before the book is printed, in case she wants to add anything else. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use the code BIRTHFUL at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 10% off today.
And we're back talking with Gail Tully. So what happens, because not every person's going to know what type of pelvis shape they have.
That's right. And every pelvis is going to work better when it's not held back. So remember, we talked about the mobile sacrum. So what we can do to help our sacrum be mobile, it's going to help our births. And the same things that help our pelvis be mobile are helping our soft tissues.
So what can moms do to make that sacrum more mobile and those soft tissues more aligned?
You know, I've really been influenced by Katie Bowman on this, and she really suggests starting out with calf stretches and doing calf stretches for a couple of weeks and then getting into squats. And she has a very specific way of doing squats and doing them more once you learn how to do them with your feet flat on the floor and your ankles underneath your knees. I like hanging on to two doorknobs of one open door and leaning back away from the door. Like you're going to sit on a chair that's too far behind you to actually sit on, but you're tipping your pelvis to try to reach that chair that's too far back.
So sticking that tailbone out and kind of trying to keep your knees behind your toes.
Yeah, your knees are behind your toes. Yep, right over your ankles, and your knees are not that far apart, you know, comfortable for the belly to fit in between. And you don't have to do a deep squat. You can start, you start out with the calf stretches for a couple of weeks, and then you do a few squats now and then through the day. But none of this 50 squats a day, 100 squats a day in the city living.
Because we're not used to doing squats. We got to build up to it.
Yeah, and we need to do squats in our daily life. So put your cutting board on the floor and squat, scrape your vegetables, or, you know, find other ways to integrate squatting in your life. Squatting on the toilet is ideal if you have a safe platform for your feet.
There's the squatty potties.
Yeah, and that gives you a passive squat, so you don't have to have the muscles to squat on a squatty potty. But it re-angles you, and it's really a positive invention. I'm really in favor of that concept. So, okay, calf stretch, squats, the hip openers, walking, you know, and thinking about letting that core be toned and flexible, but not built up. We're not trying to go for strength or tightness or shortness. Having tight abdominals in pregnancy is not ideal. You know, a tight neck and shoulders is not ideal.
Mm-hmm. So you just want toned.
Yeah, you want tone and flexibility. You want to have the movement.
And then things like chiropractic adjustments, or you were talking about massage, or are those beneficial and are they required, or can they?
They're always required, but again, it's like, where are we on the spectrum?
Mm-hmm.
And so if I misjudge myself as being overly ideal, sometimes I find out a little too late that I'm not. So I'm not qualified to assess another person. That's not my forte, but as most midwives, I tend to notice certain patterns. For one thing, pelvic instability and pain. Like, some women are in so much pain when they're laying on their side in bed, or they're in pain laying down, and they try on this side and they try on that side, and they end up having to sit up because they just can't sleep. Now, that's not nature's way. Why in the world would we evolve to be so uncomfortable to carry our young? That's not normal in the animal kingdom. So why in the world would we think it's normal for human? And so pelvic instability is a sign something's off, and then fetal position reflects that instability, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
It's also nutritional. We need good nutrition. We need good calcium, magnesium. We need the proper kinds of iodine, without being silly and taking iodine supplements without the supervision of an expert. But seaweed in our diet, iodized salt, these are good things. We need a functioning metabolism.
Getting proper sleep too.
Yeah, and our omega-3s and our smart fats and a salt taste and enough movement to support our metabolism. That's where prenatal yoga is nice, is when it's not too vigorous or not overemphasizing just a couple of moves, but is integrated with the pregnancy, then it's also helping our metabolism have improved function, and that includes our thyroid. So these are important things. We don't want to be eating junk because every bite counts right now. So getting the good stuff is helping our metabolism. Our metabolism is helping the baby be in a good position and having our body be flexible. Okay, so let's move on from that and mm-hmm. talk a little bit about labor, should we?
Yeah, we can do that. Actually, so I want to talk about labor, and I also want to talk about how can moms figure out what position their babies are in, because
mapping. Yeah, let's talk about belly mapping.
That's because you've mentioned that baby's position is sort of a reflection of their soft tissue. So that could be another figuring out how baby is can help them figure out how much, maybe a little bit of where they are in that spectrum.
That's a good idea. So first we have to know what week's gestation it matters. And balance matters throughout, because we're going to have better hormonal function and comfort. Then we want to think, okay, it's normal for the baby to be laying on its side in the womb, maybe a little oblique, maybe really sideways, for 26 weeks of pregnancy. Then around 26 weeks, maybe 24, sometimes earlier, sometimes later, 28 weeks, the baby should be vertical. Well, I say should be because, you know, I'm talking like a school teacher, I guess. I have some lovely school teacher friends.
Well, you can't be absolute, right?
Yeah. Right. There's no absolutes because sometimes babies know more than we do. So babies are typically vertical around 26 to 28 weeks. And this might mean breech first and then head down. So if the baby's breached for a while, before 28 weeks, that's considered totally normal. And the ligaments have the baby lined up vertically. The baby needs to be vertical to come out later. Then by the time 28, 30 weeks is happening, the heaviness of the baby's head is such, it brings the baby's head down. So the mother has to think, if they're going to figure out their baby's position, how many weeks they are, so that they know what to expect. Because if they're looking for the baby to be vertical and they find the baby sideways, but they're 24 weeks in pregnancy, that's pretty normal.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no worry about it. If they have a history of the babies being sideways in their womb, they can start already with the forward-leaning inversion just for 30 seconds, just for 3 breaths. The instructions are on the website with the reasons not to do it, like I said before, not with high blood pressure. And then if the mother doesn't have any risk factors of maybe a cesarean for a baby that wasn't vertical in the past pregnancy, then she might wait until she's 30 weeks or 32 weeks, according to the mother's preference, and start working on balancing for the fetal position then. So we do daily essentials any time of pregnancy, what every mother can, and if we need to do more for comfort, for fetal position, or for soothing a challenging birth history, we would start as early as we can, but I would say probably by 20 weeks or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because even though the baby's not in a bad position in the second trimester, the balance of the body is being set up, and the baby's future position is getting set in the second trimester. And there's a little bit of study on that, but they're mostly talking about women that are upright or women who spend their entire pregnancies in bed because of health reasons. So they did find that it was important in second trimester to be walking around being upright if your health allows it. But I want to take it further than that,
mm-hmm.
to the balance. So now, to tell the baby's position or not, we think about how little baby is. Like all people, the back is, the limbs curve away from the back, right? Your back is smooth and flat, and the legs and arms sort of bend towards the front. And in the fetal position, you know, the arms and legs tend to be curled up towards the tummy and the tummy bent a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
The chin drops down. So we can use that information when we try to figure out baby's position. So if a woman has to lay down on her back, and let's say it's going to be more easy to figure out your baby's position from 36 weeks to the end of pregnancy, some women can find the baby's position at 34 weeks, and a very few women can figure it out at 28 weeks or so. And it depends on how firm, what I say is the broad ligament. A lot of midwives will say how it's the abdominals, how strong is the woman's abdominals. That can be too, but it can also be tension in the broad ligament, because when you do some rebozo sifting, the Mexican shawl is mm-hmm. the rebozo, and there's some wonderful relaxation techniques that mothers can do. I like it when mothers are on hands and knees, and the rebozo is like a hammock in their belly, and their partner stands behind them and lifts their belly up from behind, and like putting the baby in a hammock, and then rocks the hammock very slightly, little bits, and brings it up to a sifting, gradually brings it up to a sifting speed.
Sort of like those 50s exercise machines, but but on hands and knees.
You're right, exactly, and more gently and, mm-hmm. and more tuned in with the mother. So if the person doing its knees are slightly bent, not locked, but slightly bent, it gives them more perception and more skill in doing it. And that tends to help relax the broad ligament. It helps put the mother in a relaxed state. It's a wonderful technique. It's actually one of the most important techniques for comfort for all women, as long as she's not bleeding or cramping unrelated to labor. So it's not a bloody show, as a saying is, but it could be some bleeding in pregnancy that would send you to the doctor. Then you would never do these techniques and you would go to the doctor, right? Mm-hmm. You wouldn't stop and do these techniques. So I know that sounds a little extra cautious, but we have now, the latest count was 180,000 visitors to Spinning Babies a month. And in 180,000 people coming, I realize I have to be very clear as I can be.
That's fantastic, all the people that you're helping.
It's really great. And we are hearing wonderful stories of women having more comfortable pregnancies, of women having, you know, dramatically shorter labors after long first labors, or first-time mothers who are having, you know, 6 or 8 hour labors that are comfortable. Now, those women are working it every day. And I don't mean working it like a athlete. I mean moving gently into balance and, you know, doing those range of motion exercises. Really great.
Keeping active and doing their daily revisions and your recommendations from the website.
Yes. And for those women that are already athletes, it's the patience of softening, of getting that feminine softness for the baby to pass through. So we want length in the pelvic floor, not strength in the pelvic floor. When we have length, we'll have flexibility and tone, and there'll be the strength there, but we're not going for the strength.
Because you need to create space.
Yeah, that's right, Adriana. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, and we really think about it as, let's make space for the baby. We don't have to know the baby's position. I noticed that if a mother, you know how a mother gets a little browner line down the center of her tummy from her belly button down to the pubic bone?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the, I call that the center line. It's really helpful in belly mapping because the mother can say, okay, maybe it is her left side, feels a big, firm, smooth part of the baby, feels kind of hard on that side, where her right side would be kind of more squishy but bumpy, little bumps or kicks maybe on her right side. That means the baby's back would be on her left and the limbs would be over on the right. So the baby is likely facing her right side. Now, how do we know if that's left occiput anterior or left occiput transverse or left occiput posterior? It could be any of those three. The back of the head could be a little bit in the front in the left for left anterior, right to the mother's left side. That would be left transverse. And or left in the back for left occiput.
And really, any of the lefts would be good, so they don't need to get very much into that detail, or just...
Right, that's what I think. And even the baby that's posterior, if the back of their head is on the left, that usually means for most of the left occiput posterior babies, that their chin's tucked, so the contractions will help rotate the baby.
Mm.
And it's uncommon, it happens once in a while, but it's uncommon that left occiput posterior baby would get their forehead stuck on the pubic bone and head into a really long labor. Where the baby that's coming from the right, their back is straight because the right side of the uterus is more steep, and so that puts their forehead sometimes over the pubic bone. And so the first time mother doesn't have her baby engaged when she starts labor. So see, Spinning Babies is about how to help the baby's chin get tucked, how to make room for the baby. It's all to help the baby rotate with the contractions of labor, because rotation is very much a part of labor progress and the natural process of labor. And having the baby rotate is a sign of progress. And it sometimes needs to happen before the cervix dilates very much. So if we're only looking at cervical dilation, we are not looking at the key to labor progress. We're looking at the result.
Mm-hmm. Because we always hear this partnership of mom's jobs to dilate, baby's jobs to rotate.
Ooh, I bet you found that on the Spinning Babies website.
I've been hearing that for years.
Yeah, well,
it's a perfect saying, right?
That's where it comes from. And yes, because it's not really by trying to force open the cervix with Pitocin or different medications that are offered or directed to pregnant and birthing women, we're looking for the result. And basically, Adriana, I liken it to the two-year-old who wants to go through the door. The two-year-old runs ahead of his or her mother, pounds on the door, wants to get outside to play. The mother comes over and turns the doorknob, and magically the door opens and out they go to play. It's like if we pound the pressure at the cervix with Pitocin, turning up that Pitocin, we are trying to break through that door without turning the doorknob. And the babies, when the baby rotates, it fits through the pelvis like a puzzle piece dropping into place. Then the back of the head, the crown of the head, comes onto the cervix. Because the mother's been in labor now, her body's ready to open and she's soft. She's ready to have her baby. We're waiting on the baby. We tried some moves and some techniques. I like to do balance first and then use gravity and movement, traditional maternal positions in labor, to help the baby move through the levels of the pelvis from the inlet at the top to get into the pelvis, through the middle or the mid pelvis, and out the outlet. So there's different shapes at the different levels of the pelvis, and the baby turns its head to fit those. If the soft tissues are soft enough, they don't hold the baby back, and then the uterine contractions can rotate the baby.
And I find that this is really important for moms to think about. Like, go to Spinning Babies and read the information and don't be overwhelmed, because you'll figure it out. It's harder to talk about it on the radio than to actually see it. So there's great visuals on Spinning Babies. But I so often hear a common fear of, is my baby too, you know, will my baby fit through my pelvis? Is baby too big? And I think it's really valuable, all the work you do, because it has nothing to do, or not nothing to do, but that disproportion of head too big for the pelvis is extremely rare, whereas it's more about considering you've got to have the baby's smallest part of the head go through the biggest part of the pelvis, and yes, then it will work. So it's not so much of, is my baby too big? Rarely is baby too big. It's more, is my baby in the right position, and am I balanced and in the right position so that this baby can flow right through?
That's it. Because it's the angle of the head, not the size of the head. The baby whose chin is tucked can help with the birth, can wiggle its shoulder and press the crown of the head down. It can find the roomier spot in the pelvis. The baby is designed to do that, and the head is designed to mold and turn into that cone shape that people find funny to joke about, you know. And that cone shape goes away within hours. You got to take a picture right away because it's going to be gone before the hour. And it is fascinating to me to see the competence and the skill of the baby being born and the instinctual competence of the mother who is in somewhat in balance. Like I said, we don't have to be perfect. She's getting those signals in birth. She goes deep into her birthing being, and the hormones flow through her. So she feels, oh, I should get up now. I should rock this way and lean that way, and I need to grab someone here and move there. And now it's time to rest, and now it's time to get up. And there's this rhythm to labor that she can trust and follow when her and the baby are lined up together.
Mm-hmm. And with that rhythm, things will flow. But
yes.
So let's say mom's in labor, and labor isn't flowing so well and the contractions aren't coming like clockwork and stronger, longer, closer together, but they are a little kind of all over the place. 5 minutes, 3 minutes, 20 minutes, 10 minutes, not progressing. What then?
Yes. Well, I call that an asymmetrical labor pattern. It's not predictable, and it seems like it's starting, and then it seems like it's stopping. And some women say, is my starter broken? Why won't this labor start? What's the matter? And it can get tiring, and you get your expectations and your hopes up, and then it backs off. So there isn't this rhythm, right? You can't establish this rhythm with this labor. So what's going on? So a couple things to think about. Is the mother due? If the mother isn't due and she's having some contractions, is she hydrated? Is she talking to her care provider to get assessed? If they're more than 4 hours, she wants to get assessed. If she is due, then is she a first-time mom? Is she, is the baby engaged? Now, how do we tell if the baby's engaged? Because sometimes when the forehead is over, the pubic bone, the back of the head can be in the pelvis. If the midwife or nurse or doctor reaches inside to feel the baby's head, they might feel that the head's not wiggling and it's in the pelvis. But you know, Adriana, nobody checks the outside for the forehead. I had a mom teach me that once. She kept having labor at night, and it would go away in the day. Now, this was a mom who had had 4 children. I think this was her 4th pregnancy. So that is more common with women who've given birth. And some first-time mothers do that, where there's contractions at night that go away in the light. And that's a hormonal thing, right? Typically considered a hormonal thing. But when contractions come on strong in the day, and then they stop, but they were super strong, like, wow, you know, set up the midwifery bag, this baby's coming. Oops, it's not. Everything stopped. Or really spaced out.
And it's spacing out at night.
Or it's spacing out in the day, too.
Okay.
I mean, there's not a rhythm of the circadian rhythm. It's not on the circadian rhythm or this hormonal changes over the 24-hour period. But it again, it's not symmetrical. So there isn't, it's just not following the pattern that we see when babies are going to come quickly or within a day. So this can tie your mom up.
Mm-hmm.
So let's check. Is the baby's whole head in the pelvis? If not, we add balance. We do our balancing exercises. And there's some special ones. We talked about the daily ones. There's some weekly ones that can also be used in labor. We can do that rebozo sifting early in labor and follow it up with the forward-leaning inversion where the mother puts her knees on her couch. And as long as she doesn't have high blood pressure, glaucoma, or some type of medical risk, she's a healthy woman. She can put her knees on the edge of the couch, put one hand on the floor, the second hand on the floor, then the first elbow on the floor, the second elbow on the floor. Let her neck hang. She's not resting her head on the floor, but she's tucking her chin. And this gives her uterosacral ligament a chance to stretch. She takes just 3 breaths, just about 30 seconds. Longer isn't particularly better. But in labor, she could do this all the way through a contraction. It wouldn't be harmful to do it through a few contractions. We're figuring she's a first-time mom whose labor isn't coming on. The head is down. She's doing it for a short period of time. She comes back up. The uterine contractions are keeping the baby head down, but being upside down is helping that uterosacral ligament lengthen, and that takes out a twist. It becomes more symmetrical in the lower uterine segment. She goes from the forward leaning inversion back up onto her heels. She sits on her heels, takes a couple breaths, letting the baby and the uterus settle right back down where it belongs. The baby is not likely to turn breech. Okay, people have been looking at this for People have been coming to my website and doing this for years, and in labor, the baby is not likely to go.
And you're not there for long. You're 30 seconds, three breaths.
Yeah, and in labor, in an active labor, you could be there for even three contractions if they're close enough together. But same thing. It's letting that lower uterine segment have more space so the baby can tuck its chin. Then we go from forward-leaning inversion into sideline release. And sideline release is not laying on one side. It's a very specific bodywork technique from the myofascial community. It's very picky at how to do it, but really any adult can learn how to do it.
And on the website, you have beautiful illustration or photos that illustrate how to do it with great instructions. So I'm just going to tell people go there.
Yeah,
instead of trying to explain it with audio.
Exactly. But just to know that it's very precise and the helper has to be close to the mother so she can't fall. And it's a great technique. It relieves pain. It helps so many labors. And you have to do it on both sides because we don't want to make room on one side and leave one side with less room, or baby will go sideways to, you know, its head will come down like asyncletism to come through, not exactly sideways, but tipped. And so we do it on both sides, and then it helps the baby that was already asynclitic to have room to come through, sometimes to correct itself, but usually to soften and have room. It helps the baby who's facing a hip that got stuck on a bone, called transverse arrest, to be able to turn into the diagonal and go past that bone, get into the roomy space and get past that bone. It can help. Sometimes a posterior baby will turn right into the right during the technique. So it's quite a useful technique. And those are the three sisters, the rebozo sifting, the forward-leaning inversion, and the sideline release. And then there's standing sacral. So I call that the Fantastic Four because the standing sacral gives flexibility and mobility to the sacrum. So we're getting...
Is that the lift and tuck?
No, that's okay. Help with engagement. So first we did balance. Now we're going to do a technique that's going to aim the baby into the pelvis and help the chin tucked. And the essential part of this technique was designed by Janie King, an engineer in Texas who wrote Back Labor No More. Excellent little book. And I just emphasize doing a posterior pelvic tilt while you do it. And that increases the success of this technique. It's done for 10 contractions in a row. And it helps tuck the baby's chin, and the contractions are the key. It's not effective without the contractions. The contractions then rotate the baby off the pubic bone and lets the baby into the pelvis.
And the important thing is you really need to commit to those 10 contractions.
Yeah.
I find.
You're often interrupted. A person will come in and say it's time for checking the baby's heart rate, for instance. So you don't get to do it through one contraction. That's okay. Just start with the count on the next contraction. It's a wonderful technique. We're really blessed to have it. It's well known in the labor world, but people don't always understand to do the posterior pelvic tilt. The posterior pelvic tilt is if you back up to a wall and you put your arm behind your back in the lower back, you feel that curve where you have space for the arm. Now you're going to let your feet come a little bit away from the wall and bend your knees and flatten your back into the wall so there's no room for an arm back there anymore. And that tilt of the pelvis to flatten the lower back is the posterior pelvic tilt. It helps the baby in the top of the womb. So it's great for early labors. But sometimes the baby doesn't come into the womb even though the mother's 10 centimeters. Can you believe that? And so the woman's pushing, and then the nurse says, oh, you know, we've just discovered the baby's really high.
I've seen it happen.
Yeah, it's one of the more common causes of a cesarean. And now the mother's kind of past the point of abdominal lift and tuck. She sure could do it at 10 centimeters dilated as long as her provider's there, because once the baby comes in the pelvis, it's not going to be long before the baby's in her arms. And we want to make sure that someone's there to help her catch the baby. But if the cervix isn't dilated yet, sometimes helping the baby into the pelvis is what will then dilate the cervix.
So the baby puts some pressure, some weight on that cervix.
Yeah. Yeah, some symmetrical weight from the crown of the baby's head. And the sideline release might even help the uterus be more, like if there was a little twist in the uterus or the piriformis muscle in the bottom, in the mother's bottom, was tight and pulling her sacrum over or something. These are techniques that make more, they release those tensions and untwist those twists and makes room for baby.
Which is lovely because then you have a flowing birth.
Yeah, and you know, I can't help everybody, Adriana. I do notice that the spinning babies enthusiasts, they're really paying attention to where it's baby and what's the technique that matches that level of the pelvis. In fact, it's simple enough that, you know, devoted parents could learn this. So I put together the spinning babies parent class in 1 hour of how to prepare for pregnancy and 1 hour of how to tell if I'm having a normal labor and should just chill and relax and enjoy it, or is something stopping the labor progress, and what are the most common reasons that a woman who wanted a natural birth ends up with a cesarean, reasons you know, from baby's position point of view. Mm-hmm. So there's a wonderful childbirth methods out there, or no method at all, and the instinctual method. Those are all great. So spinning babies can be applied with any method. Spinning babies is not in and of itself a method. It's an approach. It's a way to look at birth coming from the mother and the baby, and helping the mother and the baby be partners in birth.
Mm-hmm. And I encourage all the listeners that are pregnant to go and check out spinningbabies.com, because there's the techniques are really well explained. And I love that you even have a section, a big button that says, if you're in labor now, click here. It's like the cliff notes of what to do.
Yeah, because, you know, people are finding spinning babies on their phone in labor. Mm-hmm. And so I tried to have a little, like, if this is going on, do this. And if that's going on, do that.
So there's even a last-minute resource. People, they're go to spinning babies.
Yes, and we're on that spectrum of ease, you know. So, for instance, a woman who suffered infertility, you know, polycystic ovary syndrome, or some of these things are going to make things more complicated. So let's get into balance in all ways. I'm talking a lot about the physical, but we need the hormonal and the, you know, coming out of this fight or flight alertness that we live in cities in. You know, we have to be able to find a place to be calm and nurturing with ourselves and with life and move into a peaceful place. And so spinning babies is the active part of patience. I'm giving those women that want to do some active preparation some very useful skills and tools to use, even though I realize that not everybody needs this. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, adding balance is not going to hurt anybody, but not everybody is out of balance, right?
Right. But the truth is, we've got these really comfy chairs that let us, you know, slouch and lean back, and we're not doing many squats. I mean, we all could use a little more balance. We're not out of whack, but we could all use a little more balance.
And the main thing is that we do it in a way where it's just integrated with life, and it's not a worry and a concern, so that we're not
adding stress.
You know, adding stress. You know, we're already stressed.
Yeah.
So what the change of perspective is more important than anything. Really, well, love is more important than anything. And love lives in that more relaxed state. That's where we grow love, not in our fight and flight, right? Not in our hyper alert and I'm really worried about my baby's position. It's natural for pregnant women to be a little bit anxious about, am I doing things right? And will I be a good mother? And, you know, that's actually beneficial to pay attention to that. But it's not beneficial if we worry about it so much that we're losing sleep or we're getting a faster heart rate. We're stressed about it. See, so we want to change our emotional and mental state for positive. We want to go for yes and have that belief. So I'm in a kind of a predicament of talking about what are the common causes of an unexpected cesarean or an unwanted cesarean and how to have this peaceful, chill kind of a attitude, which is where birth lives, right?
Yeah. No, I, yeah, that is our constant crux, definitely. But I think you're doing a great job of giving people, giving moms and their partners tools so that in case they things are a little bumpy, they can get right back into the flow if positioning and space is what's causing it to be bumpy. So yeah. I thank you so much for... for all you do. It's been an honor to have you here. And we, you know, obviously will keep in touch and keep following what you do. Spinningbabies.com is the best way for people to follow what you're doing. You also have Facebook, right?
Yes. Spinning Babies on Facebook. But if people want to engage in the conversation, go to spinningbabies.com. There's also a blogspot, Spinning Babies at Blogspot. That has dip the hip and forward-leaning inversion and stories, and it's a great place to visit too.
You got to go and take a look, people, if you want to know what dip the hip looks like.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much, Gail.
You're welcome.
Mighty Ones, check out the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can learn more about me, the show, send me messages, and more. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you. To best support this podcast, support its sponsors and get free goodies while you're at it. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin McLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. I'm Adriana Losada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to a mighty parent as they share their amazing story here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening.